from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Oakland City Council is considering a resolution to decriminalize natural psychedelics, including so-called magic mushrooms. The resolution passed the council's Public Safety Committee last night, and it's expected to come to a full vote next month. Supporters of decriminalization point to studies suggesting that psilocybin, the active agent in mushrooms, can ease hard-to-treat addiction, depression, and other conditions. If approved, Oakland would become the second U.S. city after Denver to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. In this segment, we'll talk about what the resolution would accomplish, and we want to hear from you. Should natural psychedelics be decriminalized? Why or why not? Let me tell you who is joining us. We have Carlos Plazola with us. He's chair of the Decriminalized Nature Group, which is sponsoring the Oakland resolution, with us joining by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you aboard. Also, Brian Anderson is with us. He's here in studio. He's a mental health research fellow, San Francisco VA Medical Center, staff psychiatrist with Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you as well. Let me begin with you. There is some pretty good evidence that, well, psychedelic mushrooms can be of real help in terms of mental health, in terms of depression and anxiety and even treatment of cancer patients. Yeah.
Well, there's some evidence that the active component, one of the active components in psilocybin mushrooms can be used as a medical treatment in some patients. But this is also based off of studies that have been small or very preliminary. But what we do see is interesting effect sizes, meaning it seems to make a difference in those people who've taken them in the trials, but that data is still pretty early on.
Data's still up in the air. Is it too soon then to move forward on this, Carlos Plazola?
Well, we don't think so, which is why we brought this to the council, and they've agreed to, at least from public safety, move it to the full council to decriminalize specific plants and fungi that are on Schedule 1. So we think they never should have been criminalized to begin with. The science wasn't there to put them on Schedule 1. It wasn't based on scientific information. It was based on politics.
Well, there's a lot of ambition behind this. I mean, I think, first of all, let me find out what happened at last night's hearing. How did the council committee react and what concerns were raised?
Yeah, there was largely support. I think the information speaks for itself. There were some doctors, some psychiatric nurse practitioners, some therapists there presenting strong information. And I think we convinced the council that from a scientific perspective, they shouldn't be criminalized and decriminalization should occur. The concerns that were raised were how do we ensure that once we open up access to communities that don't have experience with these plants and fungi, how do we ensure safe and responsible use? So there was a large number of groups there who committed to work with these communities over the course of the next 1 to 2 years as these become more ubiquitous in these communities, ensure good, safe, responsible practice.
Well, let's hear from Rebecca Kaplan, who is city council president, who is very in favor of the resolution.
Richard Nixon launched a war that we all know is stupid, racist, wasteful, and expensive. And it is long past time for us to continue fighting Nixon's war for him.
And I think it's safe to say that this ballot measure is fairly ambitious. There's one that passed in Denver. There's one up in Oregon that's scheduled for 2020. And I think you want, Carlos, to really move this forward and make it an international issue. It already is to some degree, right?
Oh, absolutely. Our goal is to get this passed through the Oakland City Council, use it as a model for other cities, and we're prepared as decriminalizednature.org to help other cities pass this in their jurisdictions and counties, and hopefully it becomes a model for states to pass.
So the eventual goal is legalization. Does that also mean dispensaries like we've seen with cannabis?
In our vision, it's not a dispensary model. It's probably a collective model, but it's not a commodity. These aren't commodities that should be sold in dispensaries. It is more medicinal, mental health medicinal.
Well, mental health and general well-being has been the centerpiece of this, Brian Anderson. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about some of the concerns that have been raised. And most of those concerns have to do with bad trips and the possibility of bad trips.
Sure. I mean, with any sort of mental health treatment, there's always risks and benefits. That's what we think about for treatments that are available now or treatments that might be available in the future. But I want to point out, I think one thing that Carlos mentioned is really helpful is that there's going to need to be some sort of structure to keep use safe. And one thing is to
They're talking about microdoses largely at this point. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if people are using small amounts, large amounts, and if it's, you know, not regulated, that's going to be difficult to, you know, educate people about what is the standard dose that people might use. But, you know, in medical trials, looking for evidence to present to the FDA about safety and how helpful a treatment could be, that's one thing. To look at data about what's safe for public policy, these are, I think, separate questions, but they do inform each other.
The big public policy question is, and this is a big question that came up certainly with the legalization of marijuana, how this affects drivers.
So I would hope that no one would take a substance like this and drive their car because we know that.
But you know they will.
Well, some people will, and people, you know, also drink alcohol and drive their car, and we try to dissuade them from doing that because of the risks, but that doesn't mean that alcohol should be illegal for everyone, but there should be some sort of control to prevent that when possible.
Aside from bad trips and driving interference, so there's been concern about panic attacks, about nausea, dizziness, all those kinds of things, but also paranoia. I mean, there are people who take these substances, and not necessarily a very significant number of people, but in fact, the number of people who are taking them and under police investigation are very small indeed, even now when it's technically illegal. But the fact of the matter is people have, like I said, bad trips.
Well, certainly. And that's why in medical studies, there's a sort of a set of criteria for screening people so they can't even get into the studies. If, for instance, they have schizophrenia or a bipolar disorder, we think that they'll have a worse outcome with these drugs. And so I would hope that if there's public policy that makes it easier for people to access this, that there will be education to prevent people with those sort of conditions from taking these drugs in the first place.
Well, what about that, Carlos Pozzolo, about screening people? I mean, you don't want necessarily people who have had psychotic outbreaks or predisposed, maybe even familial predisposition towards schizophrenia, things of that sort, necessarily messing with these hallucinogens.
Yeah, let me put this into context. So currently, in the community that we're talking about wanting to get access, first the education and information, and then eventually the materials, we have people who don't have access to good health care, period. So we already have the risky behaviors happening that come from trauma, the incarceration that happens from the war on drugs. So there's already these impacts to these communities. What we're talking about here is making plants and fungi available that have been shown to have positive effects on mental health. So the net positive there. But then the question becomes, how do we mitigate risks associated with the use? And so this is where we believe it's really about education. And what we're doing is calling upon folks who are engaged in clinical trials, people who are in the medical community, in the therapy community, to join with us in providing to these communities the type of education and information they need to have good, healthy experiences. I won't say good experiences, but sometimes a bad trip is really just something that's internally challenging, some trauma that needs to be worked through. And with good integration, they can work through it. But otherwise, without equitable access, then these folks would have no other options.
I wonder what your thoughts are, though, about an article that appeared recently by Michael Pollan, who has made the case for microdoses. In fact, he was on this program talking about his book, which was essentially personal experiments with various substances along the lines we're talking about, as well as others. And Pollan said it's too early. We've got to do more research. The FDA has to have more trials. And his real concern was putting something on the ballot ahead of the necessary research has dangers of overreaction like we saw in the 60s.
If I may respond to that, it's intriguing that Mr. Pollan himself would allow himself to have access to these, but then say that others should not. And so I do think that people in these communities are smart enough to make decisions for themselves and should have agency over their own consciousness. But it's really the question is, when these become legalized, because over time they will, we're heading in that direction, the politics are heading in that direction, who will have access ultimately to these healing plants and through what mechanisms? We already know that in many of these communities, They're underinsured. They don't have access to good health care. Our health care system is eroding. So what do they do? And so I think it behooves all of us to figure out how we make these available to these communities if truly we care about people in disenfranchised communities.
And Carlos Plazola is chair of the Decriminalized Nature, sponsoring the Oakland Resolution. Brian Anderson is with us as well. He's a mental health research fellow. Talk about the research at San Francisco VA Medical Center and a staff psychiatrist at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. Talk, if you would, Brian Anderson, about the research. Now, I know there's been a lot of work at Johns Hopkins. I've read some of Matthew Johnson's work, but there's stuff at Imperial College in London. There's data about breaking addictions, for example. There's data about success with getting people to stop smoking. So what do we know here? Because this is, some people are talking about this is like it's going to be a major revolution for mental health.
Well, what we know is that psychedelics seem to work in a way that's different from currently available treatments in mental health. They work in a way that's different from SSRIs or antidepressants like Prozac. It's different from just regular psychotherapy. This is a form of drug-assisted psychotherapy where, for instance, at UCSF, we have a group in the Department of Psychiatry studying psilocybin and another drug, MDMA, to see how this may be able to catalyze psychotherapy for patients with serious medical illnesses like major depression, PTSD. And there is data showing that this might be helpful. Again, that data is pretty early on. I would say in the United States over the last 20 years, there's been possibly a couple hundred patients treated with these experimental drugs in clinical trials over the last 20 years, maybe a couple thousand participants in the United States and Europe have taken these drugs in studies. And there's a lot of evidence that it might be safe and helpful from the 1950s and 60s. But as far as being an available medical treatment, it's a little early to get to think that we'll be able to get FDA permission at this time. Now, that being said, I think something that the Decriminalized Nature initiative brings up, which is important, is that there may be benefits and risks from a treatment like this. There's certainly a lack of access to good mental health care in the Bay Area that hopefully that is addressed as well, not just trying to get people experimental treatments. And there's also...
There's a new program in the works, which I'm sure you're aware of. It's going to be 100% availability for mental health.
Which is great. And hopefully that can also address a lot of the concerns that Carlos is bringing up. But there's also, you know, health benefits and risks of criminalizing access to substances. And we've seen that as far as outcomes in the opiate epidemic and other substance use in this country. So to take a bigger picture, I think we have to look at health questions that are go beyond just the effects of psychedelics, but also just what are the concerns for communities when we talk about if something is illegal or not.
Well, you've done some studies with hallucinogens in religious ceremonies and here in the United States, for example, peyote is legal for that purpose. What have you learned from drugs for those uses?
Well, what I think what's important to recognize is that in countries around the world, there are different levels of legality or permission to use psychoactive plants in different types of cultural settings that have their own norms and standards that hopefully facilitate safety for those who engage in those uses. For instance, in Brazil, churches that legally use ayahuasca, a psychedelic tea, also...
Ayahuasca would be permitted under these resolutions that we're talking about, right?
Correct. Here, that would be, well, it would be decriminalized in,
yeah,
in
we're
Oakland,
decriminalizing
not
everything that's from fungi or from psilocybin.
From plants like that are used to make ayahuasca. And so, you know, mushroom use in indigenous communities in Mexico has a longstanding tradition of use. That doesn't mean that it's safe by medical standards, but we know that there's traditions that have used this for a long time and people choose to do that and it seems safe enough to them.
Well, what do you think about the Oakland Resolution and what do you think about, well, decriminalizing psychedelic mushrooms? We're talking about essentially just plants and therefore nature gets into this in terms of the advocates, but those who are concerned about risks and possibilities of not necessarily dealing appropriately or inclusively with those kind of risks. I'd like to hear from our listeners, and let me give you an opportunity to join us by dialing in our toll-free number. You can do that now. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to join the program at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or join us by emailing us, forum at kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. Talking with Brian Anderson, who's a mental health research fellow at San Francisco VA Medical Center and staff psychiatrist at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. And with us by phone, Carlos Blazoa, who is chair of the Decriminalized Nature Group, which is sponsoring the Oakland resolution. Some comments coming in. Let me read a few of them. Lurleen writes, will people be able to take this mind-altering dope anytime and anywhere? How is that going to help anxiety and depression? Don't people who take hallucinogenic dope have altered perceptions of reality? To you on that, Carlos?
So what we're dealing with here is a high level of fear and misunderstanding about these plants and fungi. And while we stand here seeking to establish a high standard of scientific evidence in order to decriminalize, we didn't have that same standard when we criminalized these in the 60s and 70s and onward. But the result of criminalizing these has meant mass incarceration. The question that people should be asking, particularly in communities of color throughout the United States, we've seen mass incarceration. The question I'd like people to ask themselves is, what did the world look like before they were criminalized? Because in the research I've done, I've not seen a bunch of news articles or studies about people jumping out of windows when they're on these plants and fungi. They were treated with respect. They were part of our culture, particularly cultures throughout the world that weren't necessarily Western culture. And I think it behooves us not just ask, where are we now and what are the fears we're dealing with now, but how did we get here?
Carlos, let me get your response to another comment by a listener named Katie, who writes, I'm thrilled to see Oakland moving this conversation forward, but why is the measure consistently being misreported by the media with a focus almost entirely on psilocybin mushrooms and not on the full range of Schedule 1 plants mentioned in the resolution? Let's get the full story out there. Well, we've mentioned ayahuasca, and certainly there are a lot of fungi that fit into this category. I'm not sure why the media has been making mushrooms. Maybe that's a sexier story or something, but we're trying to flesh out the full story here. Actually, I was just going to ask you, though, Carlos, a lot of this is already going on in Oakland. That's according to Noel Gallo. It's just underground.
Oh, there's tremendous networks of this happening underground, and perhaps one of the things that people should look at more closely, without divulging names, is what are the practices that are taking place underground, because it's very sophisticated, it's very thoughtful, there's a lot of preparation that occurs, a lot of integration that occurs afterwards. There's people who are well-trained, in fact, doctors and nurses and psychiatrists who are doing this work underground, but the problem is that those who have access to it have not traditionally been and are not disenfranchised communities where we have the highest rates of trauma.
Let me go to our callers. We've got plenty of them, and we begin, Keith, with you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So with the recent FDA approval of esketamine, I know that that one is actually not required to be taken under the supervision of a psychiatrist. Is there anything where the new psychoactives would be legalized or decriminalized but required to be taken under medical supervision?
Yeah, you want to address that, Carlos?
Can you repeat the question, please?
He just wants to know about medical supervision. And in fact, I'm looking at a tweet here that dovetails with that. Amy writes, all evidence points to the necessity to pair therapy with all mental health medication. Why are the advocates ignoring this? All meds can be otherwise dangerous for individuals. So again, we get back to that question about, and it gets down to also, well, casual use, I think. If you're going to use this in a bar or a club, there's concern about self-protection and protection of valuables and all of that sort of thing. How much do we have? You're talking about the educational side of this, but what kind of safeguards do we have in terms of, well, people like Brian Anderson here are getting involved in the picture?
But and again, it gets back to irrational fear and about these substances, because there's been such a war on them that the standard now for allowing decriminalization and legalization is so high relative to risk. There are practices already occurring that within the psychedelic community that seeks to mitigate risk and help people through what otherwise would be thought of as bad trips. So there's a higher level of care, it seems, within the underground community for these plants and fungi than there is for taking even some over-the-counter drugs, pharmaceutical-based drugs, and impacts they have.
Well, let me ask Brian Anderson, does this concern you as a health professional that there may not be enough guidance here or safeguards?
Well, just, you know, going back to what this resolution is about decriminalization. This is not about legalizing and making people be able to go get this from their physician. So to be very clear, none of my colleagues will be prescribing these plants or fungi anytime soon. I mean, in mental health, we see the consequences of people using all sorts of substances in too high of a dose or too frequently. Unfortunately, people do have problems with substance use, and some people may get benefit from their unregulated use of these plants. But we can't predict that based off of information we have right now. And my main concern is that there's not going to be enough information out there. It seems like there's already confusion about what this new law might even be and mean for the Bay Area. And then there's going to be confusion about how do people do this safely if they choose to do that. So I hope that organizations like Carlos's organization, others like Erie, based in the East Bay, Chacruna Institute here in San Francisco that I'm affiliated with, will continue to provide information on how people should and should not use these substances from a harm reduction perspective, because I think there will be some negative outcomes and possibly some good outcomes, but we just don't know.
And here's David joining us from the San Jose. David, welcome.
Hi. So my question was, how is this a positive? Because I was diagnosed with schizophrenia related to hallucinogenics and methamphetamine, so drug abuse. So how is this a positive? Because everybody is different, and you don't know how you're going to react to it. And I ended up with schizophrenia because of it. So I just wanted to know the positive. I could take my answer off air.
All right. Thank you for the question, David. You want to address that, Carlos Palaloza?
Certainly, yeah. In fact, this is a good time to mention that we, as a collection of groups, including Erie and other groups that are been active in this work for decades, are working on and have presented to council yesterday a framework for education in urban communities in terms of safe and responsible use of these plants. So as part of that, we would certainly recommend that people who have schizophrenia or other mental health illnesses do consult with their doctors before using. So we're taking a responsible approach, and we hope that our framework would be at least looked at by other urban areas that are interested in doing this, because we do have doctors and we have nurses and we have longtime practitioners contributing to this framework, educational framework, that would help guard against some negative impacts, particularly for those people who are more vulnerable with mental health.
Well, we should mention that there are no synthetic drugs involved in this, like LSD or ecstasy. And here's David, who writes, we have enough trouble with alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, opiates, and other drugs. Huge numbers of kids are vaping nicotine and marijuana oils and wax. It would be a mistake to make more drugs available to more people. Plenty of people have access to illicit drugs now. Legalizing more drugs will get more people, including kids, on stronger drugs. Brian Anderson, some thoughts from you on that?
You know, the other caller said that he had a drug-induced schizophrenia. We know that people can have negative clinical outcomes from using some of these plants. Some people will report that it helped them in other parts of their life. What seems to be important to me is that we're talking not about medical treatments. We're talking about self-medicating, people accessing these treatments outside of a real a medical relationship with the provider. So if people are going to go ahead and use these plants, hopefully they feel like they can talk to their doctors about it, or other healthcare providers, learn about these risks and avoid negative outcomes. Like Carlos said, someone who has schizophrenia already shouldn't be taking these plants.
Yeah, but Carlos, this last listener, David, was pointing out the fact that you're just going to make possibly more people who might be vulnerable users. There's going to be a lot of recreational use, or an increase in recreational use. And again, I come back to the concern over the effect on driving and the like.
Yeah. So what we've seen, and I think it's a good opportunity to look at states that have already legalized or decriminalized cannabis. What we're seeing is actually reduction in arrest, reduction of frequency of use in high schools. So there are positive effects that come from decriminalizing medicinal plants. I do want to point out that what we're seeing nationally is an opiate epidemic in terms of overdosing and and deaths from opiates. These are pharmaceutical-based. Where mushrooms and ayahuasca, particularly mushrooms, are readily available in the community. People who want them and pursue them can get access to them already.
Carlos, I've got an underground mushroom user on the line here. Let's hear what Shannon has to say. Shannon, you're on.
Hi. I have PTSD and treatment-resistant depression from my military service. And after trying everything that the VA offered, including tons of pharmaceuticals, I turned to mushrooms, and it was life-changing. One day, one experience was absolutely life-changing, and I just wish that I could have that experience and have that treatment offered under the umbrella of my VA care, which is generally pretty excellent. But I, you know, it's not something that I could talk about with my psychiatrist and psychologist and get therapy to really support the experience. So I see that as being a huge benefit to decriminalizing this. And it's also not something that people, it's an experience. It's not like a high that people will be seeking out every day, in my opinion.
Well, thank you for your opinion, Shannon. Glad to hear from you. Thank you for the call. Let me hear from another caller right away, and that's John. John, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you. So I left a career in corporate America, a six-figure career, to become a life coach helping people with addiction, specifically using iboga and other plant medicines to overcome it. But my question is,
Iboga is in this resolution, by the way. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So my question is, in this resolution, what happens with things like kratom and the opium poppy? Because these are both nature as well, and I see it as leading to a slippery slope. And then the second thing is, I also participate regularly in ayahuasca ceremonies, and on the minority population, I really don't see them participating, which saddens me, and that's all.
Okay, that's another matter entirely. But what about the slippery slope? You want to address that, if you could, Carlos Paloza?
Sure. Yeah, we specifically excluded coca and poppy from this measure. They're different compounds in those, and they do have a higher rate of addiction. The plants that we're talking about don't lead to addiction. And so for us, it's a good approach to take without the risk of addiction with opiates and coca. Now, okay. We believe the war on drugs shouldn't have happened to begin with, and that coca and poppy should be public health issues, not criminal issues, because the biggest problem for all of the drug issue is incarceration.
We got seconds left here. I want to read a tweet. This proposal is nonsense. Tweets, Teresa, if these things truly help people with real trauma, do the random double-blind test to prove it. Anecdotal evidence is baloney. We do not need more high people driving around our already dangerous streets. These are real fears. We're going to have to end it there. Glad to have heard from both sides and the testimony we heard from Shannon as well. Brian Anderson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Carlos Palazzola. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.